Welcome to The Aging Scientist, focusing on all things science and aging. I'm Clarissa Giebel, and I'm a researcher at the University of Liverpool. In this season, we're focusing on care homes, and I'm keen to hear from different experts about their working and lived experiences of the care home sector. One thing that became even more evident during the pandemic was the need for coherent big data in and across care homes. Well, really what we need is big data for the social care sector at large. But let's take one step at a time and focus on care homes today to see just how important big data can be and how close we may be. I am joined today by Professor Adam Gordon. Adam is professor of the Care for Older People at the University of Nottingham. He has been leading research in care homes for over a decade now, mainly looking at models of healthcare and how to prevent avoidable harm in care homes. During the pandemic, he was involved in researching COVID-19 diagnostics and preventative therapies in care homes. He's now part of a large team of researchers looking at how data can be collected and used to support the best possible care for care home residents. Welcome, Adam. Great to have you on the show.
Hello, Clarissa.
So to start us off, Adam, before we dive into the big data issue, how did you come to work with care homes in the first place?
Yeah, so that's a good question. How does anyone come to work in care homes? Back in 2006, a group of researchers at the University of Nottingham sat down and spent a couple of days mapping out what at that time they thought were the big areas of uncertainty around healthcare for older people. And one of the issues they landed on was how healthcare was delivered to care home residents. At that time, general practice support to care homes was very variable. Some care home residents would get regular input from a general practitioner. Others would only be seen when their health deteriorated. And some care homes got, as they should have done, care free at the point of delivery from the National Health Service, whilst others found themselves paying top-up fees in order to get primary care as part of their care home enrolment. And so this was all disjointed and messy, and there wasn't really the sense that many of the people providing care in care homes had specific skills in supporting older people with frailty or complex disability. And so that group of researchers managed to get some funding from the National Institute of Health and Care Research to look at this problem. And I was drafted in as a new PhD student to do my first ever bit of research. And not only really was it my first ever bit of research, but it was the first time I'd ever really spent any amount of time in a care home. And what I did was over the next 2.5, 3 years, I spent months and working closely with care home residents and staff, gathering information about their health status, their health conditions, their disability, their cognitive function, how often they used healthcare services. And I also conducted an interview study with staff and with general practitioners about what happened when residents' health would suddenly deteriorate and they needed acute care. And what I learned through that exposure was, first of all, I really enjoyed working in the care home setting where there was time to get to know people, where care was much more person-centered, and where it was much more about well-being in addition to health, rather than the very acute environment I'd become accustomed to working as a hospital doctor. But I also learned that I really enjoyed working with care home staff. Here were a group of people who were very committed, very expert in their field, but often under-recognized and underpaid. And I thought it would be a great way to spend my time for the next decade and a half, which is what I've done, learning more and more about how to provide effective models of healthcare for older people living in care homes, and more about how to support the staff to do their job in ever more effective ways. So really, I just loved working there, loved the people that lived there and worked there, and wanted to continue working with them.
Great. And I like the clinical angle of it as well. So I come from a psychology background, but not clinical. So it's nice to hear that as well. So you've been working with care homes throughout the pandemic as well. Mm. What has it been like?
So very difficult to start off with. So I was working in hospital in a COVID ward at the beginning of the pandemic. All of university research, as you'll remember, had been shut down, but I had lots of links to the care home sector. And within a few days of the first lockdown, a care home manager friend phoned me up and asked if I would help her establish a WhatsApp support group for care home managers. And the initial idea was it would be just a support mechanism for managers around Nottinghamshire to get peer support, but also to get some expert medical advice from people like me if they were facing a difficult time. And that very quickly grew to involve managers not just in Nottinghamshire, but around the country. And at one point we had over 1,000 managers connecting with the WhatsApp group, and it remains live to this day. But what that WhatsApp group enabled me to really get a kind of firsthand experience of was how desperate the situation was in care homes during those first 2 to 3 months of the pandemic. I was speaking to managers who were sometimes looking after care homes where they'd lose between a third and half of their residents to COVID over the course of a week. And I was supporting staff through the grief, the confusion, and the anger that went with those very uncertain times and the sort of things that they were having to face. And so those early days of the pandemic were very difficult. Care homes were very isolated. They didn't get the support that they needed. And we have an awful lot of learning to do about what happened during March through to June 2020. But one of the good things about being a researcher is that you have a set of tools at your disposal that can help you improve the situations. And so through 3 research projects that I was involved in, we were able to start to make a difference. The first of these was one called the Damson Study, where we actually just described what care home managers went through during those early days. And we were able to record information about that and present it in such a way that it could be included in policy documents and help government make better decisions later in the pandemic. The second was a study called the Condor Study, where we actually took some point of care diagnostic tests and placed them in care homes and were able to evaluate how those worked in real world settings. So we were able to open up new technologies to care homes, but also open up the debate about the types of technologies that could inform practice in care homes. And then the last one was a study called the Protect CH study, which was a care home prophylaxis platform. It was designed to test drugs which would prevent COVID in a care home setting. And we spent 5 months establishing from scratch probably the most ambitious care home trial platform that's ever been established in the world. We started that in December 2020. We had the platform ready to run by the end of April 2021. And then there were some difficulties finding candidate drugs and contracting with drug companies. So we didn't have any drugs to work with until August 2021, unfortunately. And by that point, well, for the best, vaccination had transformed the situation in care homes, and we weren't seeing anything like the rate of COVID infection that we saw early in the pandemic. So we terminated the Protect CH study early. But what we learned through that study was an awful lot about how to run randomized controlled trials in care homes. And we think that the lessons that we learned through that will enable us to open up research, trial research in care homes much more comprehensively in the future. So, you know, really a mixed experience, very, very desperate situation for frontline staff working in care homes, and very difficult time supporting those staff through the first wave of the pandemic. But then the opportunity for research to start playing a role in helping recovery from the middle of 2020 onwards. So at least we had something to offer by way of help.
Definitely. We spoke first with care home staff across the UK in October 2020, and then we followed them up again in March, and family carers as well of care home residents. And it's really just shocking how much both sites were mentally affected as well, and the anger that just builds in both of them because no guidance and just no support. But I want to pick up on your, that sounds fantastic, the WhatsApp support group. And you said at one point there were up to around 1,000 managers in the group. Yeah. What was the notification pinging be like?
So I was one of a handful of clinicians on the group. So when, particularly during the acute waves of the pandemic, my clinical expertise about what to do about people with particular signs and symptoms or how to isolate particular people was very much in demand. And so I would find myself responding to pings at 1 or 2 in the morning, which I didn't mind doing, but it drove my poor wife absolutely crazy. But, you know, and at times we were getting 30 or 40 messages through that in a day. But I think one of the really important lessons from that about how you work with care homes and collaboratively with care homes is it came from a care home manager. We rallied around what it was that they felt that they needed from that. We made sure that they had the expertise that they felt that they wanted on the group. And then when there were attempts by some in the NHS to say that we should have terms of reference and governance frameworks and all these sorts of regulatory things that the NHS are very keen on, we sort of pushed back and said, no, this is really important that this is organic and that people don't feel regulated and they don't feel watched or recorded and they can have free and open discussion. And I think that's what kept that group active for so long, kept it useful for so long, and actually enabled it to address some really difficult situations that would come up from time to time. And there were other WhatsApp groups elsewhere in the country that were set up in response to that. There was one in the Southwest, there was one in London that were set up in response to that. And the care home manager that led that piece of work, Anita Astle, was invited down to receive a Nursing Times Award for the difference it made to her colleagues early in the pandemic. So I guess the big lesson from that is the NHS can be very obsessed with regulation and governance. And what that taught us is sometimes being a bit more organic about these things and trusting the wisdom of the care home sector to determine what they need is really quite important.
I mean, even from a purely research point of view, interviewing care home staff or social care staff more widely, you do notice that sometimes people feel a little bit apprehensive in really sharing the negative experiences. And there have been so many. So it's fantastic that there's been this unregulated supportive infrastructure there. But I know you're part of a lot of research into care homes, but you're also part of an NIHR-funded study called the DACHA, as I pronounce it in German, project. Which is led by Professor Claire Goodman from Hertfordshire. Yep. Can you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, so I mean, you pronounce it, you say DACHA, I say DACHA, but I'm not entirely sure who's right. But the DACHA study was actually established just before the pandemic. It stands for Developing Resources and Minimum Data Set for Care Homes Adoption. And it's really got two components to it. One is about developing research resources that use data in a more sensible way to make sense of care homes. And the second part is around developing a minimum data set to support day-to-day care delivery in care homes. I'll come back to the details of the study in a minute, but it's worth just reflecting on what we learned from the pandemic about data in care homes. So, you know, anybody that watches the news will know that there's been a lot of debate and a lot of uncertainty and actually some legal action are about the issue of how infections became seeded in care homes during the first wave of the pandemic. And, you know, one of the questions is, did hospital discharges lead to outbreaks and how many of those outbreaks led to deaths? And we can't really be particularly sure about that because we don't know how many cases of COVID there were in care homes during the first wave of the pandemic. And we don't know how many deaths there were due to COVID during the first wave of the pandemic. And that's because up until about May 2020, there was no mechanism to collate death certificates or causes of death for care homes around the UK. So really, we had to develop those mechanisms during the pandemic in order to better understand what was going on in the care home sector. And even when we want to look at things around, well, how many hospital discharges were there to care homes or how many hospital admissions were there from care homes, we're having to do really quite detailed epidemiological studies, linking together multiple NHS and social care data databases to make sense of the situation. And so when the SAGE, the Scientific Advisory Group for Emergencies, were asked to comment on the extent to which hospital discharges might have contributed towards COVID outbreaks during that first wave, they had to admit to a really quite significant degree of uncertainty because the data was so poor. For many people, ranging from health ministers down to very senior people within the NHS, they were surprised to find that data was in such a poor state in care homes. But for those of us that have worked with the sector for longer, it came as no surprise. And as I've alluded to before, we'd already set up the DATCHA project to look at minimum data in UK care homes even before the pandemic had started. So let me tell you a bit more about DATCHA. Let's talk about the developing research resources part first. And that really focuses on two parts. One is a series of systematic reviews that look at how data can be used to support research in care homes. So we've done one systematic review looking at all the outcome and process measures that have been used in care home research over the years and compiled them into a single systematic review so that researchers can really see the array of validated and tested measures. And that's just in the process of being written up for publication. We've done a separate systematic review about how data is used as part of the research process in care homes. And that work was published by a colleague, Guy Perrier, in Age and Aging earlier this year. And the last part around developing research resources is the development of an individual patient data meta-analysis platform, or IPD meta-analysis platform. And what this effectively is a trials repository where all of the randomized controlled trials that have been conducted in care homes in the UK will get pulled together, brought together into one big data repository, harmonized in terms of the data content, and then that will generate a large database that researchers can then conduct secondary analyses on. And there's a kind of increasing movement around IPD meta-analysis internationally. A lot of important questions, for example, around stroke treatment and stroke prevention have been answered through IPD approaches to stroke data. And we hope that by establishing this with care home trial data, that we'll be able to present a similar resource and a similar opportunity for researchers to answer important questions about people that live in care homes. And that work's almost finished. And when it is finished, the trials repository will be held at the University of Glasgow, and there will be arrangements for researchers to apply with details of the secondary analysis. And then a scientific committee will decide which of those takes priority and who can access the database in order to answer their questions. The minimum
just picking up on that, maybe for me to understand better as well. So that database or depository that you're putting together. Yeah. So that's for any type of trials, any type of data, any type of outcomes that have been conducted in care homes across the UK.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's not important in that type of database is what intervention was trialed, or particularly what outcome measures were used. I mean, obviously, it works better if there's some commonality in the outcome measures because it makes it easier to harmonize the data. But really, it's about bringing together lots and lots of data from individual trials so that you have a big collection of information about people that live in care homes so that you can then start to ask particular questions of that database about how people in care homes are affected by particular issues.
Yeah. Oh, very good. So what about the other part of DATCHA?
Yes, of course. Yeah, you can tell I'm itching to tell you all about it.
I know.
So minimum data sets are interesting, and I should probably give you a bit of background here. So in lots of parts of the country, lots of parts of the world, there was much more certainty about what was happening in the care home sector during the pandemic. So if you went, for example, to Canada or the United States, health policymakers, infectious disease and public health experts had a much better handle on what was happening in their long-term care sectors. And that's because in those countries, they have something called a minimum data set, or MDS for short. And the best two examples of MDSs are the American minimum data set. They're now on version 3 of that. So that's called MDS 3.0. The InterRI, which is a derivation of the MDS. InterRI stands for International Resident Assessment Instrument, which is used in a number of countries around the world, but extensively in Canada, Australia, parts of New Zealand, France, Belgium, and Italy. But actually, it's in about 80 countries around the world in one form or another. And what happens is these are data sets that are compiled by care home staff as part of their routine care duties, and then are collated centrally at a regional or national level so that care home staff can compare what they're doing with other staff in similar organizations, but also so that policymakers, epidemiologists, public health people can sort of analyze those data and make better sense of what's happening in the sector. There have been attempts in the past to look at bringing those types of minimum data sets to the United Kingdom. There have been, for example, work around bringing the InterRI tool to the United Kingdom. But one of the problems here has been really the nature of the care home sector, which is market, and therefore the government tend not to mandate things like which data solutions they should be using. The second issue has been that completing really quite comprehensive data sets can generate a lot of additional work for people working in care homes when they're already very thinly stretched. So we started from this situation and we said, well, what can we do to develop a minimum data set for UK care homes? Where does the evidence take us? And over the course of the past 2.5-3 years, we've done a number of projects, but one was focus group and interview work with key stakeholders, and that ranged from care home staff, residents and families, up to health and social care commissioners at a regional level, up to policymakers and regulators at a national level, about what they really want to see in a care home minimum data set and how they would choose to use it. We've done survey work with care homes around the UK to understand what data they already collect and how it's formatted. We've done a lot of work looking at NHS, National Health Service databases, and also databases that are held by social care providers to map out what data's already collected. And most recently, we've been meeting with software vendors who already work with the care home sector to understand how their software works and the type of data they routinely collect. And what we've actually found over the course of that, 2.5 years worth of work is there is no shortage of data being collected about UK care homes or the residents that live in them. The problem is that the data is collected in lots of different formats, it's kept in lots of different places, and it's not really collated or brought together in a kind of coherent or standardized way. So now we're in the process of doing a piece of work which will map the National Health Service data onto the data that's held by the two largest software vendors in UK care homes. And we're going to piece that together to make what we think is pretty much a complete minimum data set, which will therefore gather minimum data on care home residents using just the stuff that's already collected through routine care, both within the NHS and care homes. So you can get, hopefully, he says, touching wood as he says this, a minimum data set without generating extra work for staff working on frontline care, which means that you then don't take them away from their care duties and you don't rob residents of care and support in order to complete data. And that's a very important principle of what we're trying to do here. And from autumn of this year, in three parts of the UK, in the southeast, in the Midlands, and in the northeast, we'll be piloting this minimum data set across 20 care homes in each region, so that's 60 care homes in total, and we'll be looking at how complete the data is, the extent to which it can meet the needs of the different stakeholders that are interested in the care home sector, and looking at some of the issues around data governance and confidentiality and safety, etc. But by the end of this, we may hopefully have described the first example of a minimum data set using native data that can work in UK care homes. And with a bit of luck, that can address some of those data deficiencies that caused such dreadful problems early in the pandemic.
So does that mean the data will automatically feed into the minimum data set? Because I'm just thinking here from a research point of view, like when we think about, oh, we all at some point probably wish to set up a cohort or something. What's happening after the time it's being funded?
Yeah, so therein lies a big implementation question. What happens after it's been funded? I'll take you back a step first and say that what we're really doing here is proof of concept work. So we're showing that you can link care home data to NHS data and working out how you go about doing that. Yeah, clearly once you've made those linkages and worked out how those linkages work, and you've worked out how different pieces of software need to talk to each other, then you can start to automate that process to some extent. But that would be up to policymakers, commissioners, regulators, etc., to decide that minimum data and a minimum data set is a priority. So as researchers, our role here is to show that it can be done, show how it can be done, consider the issues around safe and effective implementation, and then to provide the evidence to policymakers, regulators, and care providers that will enable them to make a decision about whether they carry this model of a minimum data set forward. But given what we already know about the lack of data during the pandemic, and given that policymakers have been quite upset about how blind they were to the care home sector during the pandemic, I would hope that this is exactly the sort of solution that they would be looking for.
Definitely. So you've touched upon the link between care home data, hopefully, a data set, but also the NHS data. But what I'm thinking myself here as well is the need for community-based social care data. So what do people with dementia, whoever needs care, where are we with this? Because it'd be fascinating really to have all of this and be able to link all of this up together.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you start with the art of the possible, don't you? And then you go from there. And what we know for now is that the NHS data is held in a very structured and, you know, very codified way. And that's standardised, certainly across England. And even when you go to the other three UK nations, although there are differences in how they record NHS data, it's very similar to how we capture that data in England. Similarly, because the care home market is made up of a small number of data vendors, it means that a significant number of care homes will be collecting their data in a relatively standardised way. Social care data is a bit more disjointed, and you know, is held by a number of different organisations, and so there's potentially more work required to sort of harmonise that. But I think that much of what is already in the types of data sets that we see in Canada or the US, for example, we could address just by bringing together the NHS data set and what care home staff are already collecting for routine day-to-day practice. I think an important question here is how many care homes are digital, because at the moment we're using digital solutions to sort all of this out. And the answer would be, well, a significant minority of care homes are still entirely paper-based, but the pandemic has really accelerated the transition to digital in care homes. And recent government policies around the Health and Social Care Bill will accelerate that even further. So we're working with digital solutions and the understanding that that's the direction of travel. And there's not an awful lot of point in working with paper if that's going to be obsolete within a few years.
Absolutely not. And you touched upon my next question as well about what can we learn from other countries? Because I've had a lot of Dutch experts on this particular season as well, because they're really doing a fab job, I think, in care home, delivering care, but also research in terms of care homes. So you've mentioned a few countries, the US, Canada, others. So you have learned, or you as a research group, you've taken some learnings from other countries?
Oh, absolutely, and we continue to do so. So if you look at our steering group, we have representatives of the InterRI group, for example, on that steering group, so we can regularly learn from their expertise. I think one of the interesting things that we've learned from other countries is just how many, when you have a working minimum data set, is just how many different stakeholders can suddenly become interested in that. Because you think about, if you have a lot of data collated in on people living in care homes, then you start to, you know, everybody wants some access to that. You know, so the people that are making national policy will want access to that. The regulators will want access to that. The care home provider organizations will want access to that. You can quickly get into a situation, and then they all want to add their own variables in. So, you know, we're about to do a new policy initiative. Can we add something in? And you quickly end up in a situation where everybody wants to determine what's in the minimum data set. Everybody wants to add their own stuff, and nobody ever wants to take anything out. And this thing can potentially grow larger and larger and larger. Even though those minimum data sets in the US and Canada, for example, are very closely shepherded, they have just tended to get bigger over time. And that's a worry, because what we don't want to be doing is sort of adding on additional burden to care home staff, who in the UK, particularly post-pandemic, are very thinly stretched. And so one of my colleagues, Jenny Burton, led a piece just trying to sort of summarise, you know, how you keep a minimum data set manageable and what should be the governing principles for that. And we published that in the Lancet Healthy Longevity earlier this year. But just to give you a flavour of some of the principles that were in that, we said a minimum data set should focus primarily on what matters most to support those living in care homes and the staff that care for them. So it must be focused around the delivery of, you know, frontline care primarily. It should be driven by evidence base. So you should only be putting stuff in there if it's, you know, answering some sort of evidence-based call about how to deliver quality care in care homes. And ideally, the metrics and measures that go into the minimum data set should be validated. They shouldn't be stuff that people have just made up in order to answer a particular question. There should be a real focus on minimizing data burden and duplication of effort. The digital design and the kind of thought processes underpinning it have to go hand in hand, so that you're not putting bits of paper in alongside digital care records. Everything goes through the digital care record. There needs to be sort of thought about how different stakeholders access that data set. So you can have one core data set, but information governance would tell you that it shouldn't be that everybody that wants to access every aspect of that data set should be able to do so. Rather, there needs to be rights and permissions to ensure that care home residents' data are protected and that key stakeholders can only access the bit of the data set that's relevant to them. And a lot of that sort of those sort of principles we've learned from looking at what's happened in other countries and thinking about how we can learn the lessons of what they've done well and also some of the kind of challenges they've faced over the years with their own minimum data sets.
So certainly a lot of consideration in terms of what should be in a minimum data set, but also how it's created and then guided, but also how to make it a feasible, long-lasting data set, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, one of the interesting things about these international data sets is that they've all been established for slightly different reasons. So the American minimum data sets are really quite interesting example and that was the first example of an MDS. And it goes back to the 1980s. And it's actually, if you give it its full name, it's the Medicare and Medicaid long-term minimum data set. And what that's actually designed to do is to collect detailed data on how individual residents receive care in US long-term care so that care providers can be appropriately reimbursed for the care given. So it was originally designed as a reimbursement tool. And then over time, it developed into a clinical care delivery tool and then an audit tool. And then a kind of epidemiological and public health tool. And InterRI similarly has been different things to different people at different times. And actually clearly understanding what different stakeholders can get from a data set is an important part of sustainability and longevity. If everybody recognizes the minimum data set as the way to get at their issues around data, then it means that it's going to have ongoing relevance and currency for people. So I think you know, learning from them, it's important to make sure it has broad relevance and that it answers as many questions as possible, but also remembering the point about keeping data burden low and protecting residents' privacy and data.
It might also, if we have this MDS, it might reduce data duplication, I suppose, or study duplication as well.
Well, that's the idea. And, you know, the Inter-RI group are a prime example of researchers who work, as part of the Inter-RI International Group, they have a number of researchers, they have a number of research panels who regularly work with researchers from outside their group to help answer important questions about care delivery using the Inter-RI. And, you know, there's every potential that a UK minimum data set, if successful, could be used in similar ways to answer research questions without researchers having to reinvent the wheel every time they need to learn something about the care home sector. And, you know, every time I've been doing care home research, combination of epidemiological research, trials, implementation studies over the past decade. And for every single study, I've had to develop a whole new way of gathering data, a new database, a new sort of data analysis plan. And if we'd had a minimum data set, I could have used significant amounts of data from that, therefore making my job as a researcher easier, making the residents' job as a research participant easier because they don't have to give me data that's already in the MDS, and helping staff to be more efficient facilitators of research without getting in the way of their day job. So it's kind of one of these win-win-win type scenarios.
So you've kind of answered my final summary question there, I think, as well. But if we kind of summarize all of our discussion now, why would you say is big data for the care home sector so important?
Well, I mean, I think you just have to think about the example from the pandemic, which is that, you know, we were making very, very big national policy decisions on the hoof, was completely blind to what was happening in the sector. I don't think you can think of any other situation where people would be expected to make, decisions of that sort of level of magnitude in an information vacuum. So, you know, if the pandemic's taught us anything, it's that, you know, the care home sector is big, the care home sector is important. It does a really important job caring for some of the most vulnerable, most frail, most dependent members of our society, people that really deserve the best from us. And if we're going to do our best for them, then we need to have data on their care needs, on their dependency, on how they interact with health services, on the types of care they receive, how they interact with social care, so that we can really deliver care in a more effective, efficient, thoughtful, considered way. And I think that following the pandemic, it would be ethically untenable for us to continue to deliver that type of care in a data vacuum.
Absolutely. So hopefully we'll take at least one or two positive changes or learnings out of the pandemic and really implement them in the social care sector. I think that's all we've got time for now, Adam. I think we just went on talking about this really fascinating topic. I've learned a lot about your project as well here. So thank you so much. Absolute pleasure talking to you. And if you want to find out more about Adam's work, have a look at the bio with more details. Thank you.